You're listening to Your Financial Choices on WDIY Allentown. Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics, and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA, SIPC. To ensure compliance with requirements imposed by the IRS, we inform you that any U.S. federal tax advice contained in this communication is not intended to or to be used for the purpose of avoiding penalties under the Internal Revenue Code or promoting, marketing, or recommending to another party any transaction or matter addressed herein. This show is for educational purposes only. For advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA and a certified financial planner, as well as an accredited estate planner, on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can listen each and every week at wdiy.org. And that is especially helpful for folks who are outside of our listening area. If you can't reach us on your radio dial, you can reach us through the beauty of the internet at wdiy.org and click listen online and check out the new WDIY website. I believe we also have previous shows on there as well. So if you are a new listener or a frequent listener, or you may have missed shows recently, you can go on wdiy.org and look for those shows. Welcome to the show, folks. Today is December 12th, 2012. The markets were mixed today. The Dow closing down at 13,245, the NASDAQ down at 3013, the S&P closed up at 1428. I'm happy to have you all here. Last week, we discussed Social Security and Medicare with the great and wonderful Mark Basak from the Bethlehem Social Security Office. I thank Mark for being here for that. He's always a great guest, and we usually get quite a few calls. It feels like it's been forever since last week, though. Boy, it's been a very busy week for me. I feel like Mark was here like a month ago. So today I happen to be at a seminar. As you may realize, I'm a certified financial planner, but I'm also a CPA, and we have lots and lots of continuing education that we have to get. And one of the things I do annually is attend an individual income tax workshop for 2 days. So tonight I thought I would cover some last minute tax saving strategies and some other financial planning opportunities to employ. We are live. Andrea is with us and she will answer your calls, take your information, and ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we could talk without confusion. We discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I do typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic and I will do my best to answer them. In fact, I think tonight would be a great night to call in with questions. It's kind of fun, kind of a open forum this evening. If you are thinking about, you know, maybe doing some kind of tax planning for yourself and you want to run some ideas by me, let's call in and share your question and I'll share my answer as best I can with the information that's given. As always, I say if you want specific advice, you really do need to consult with your own CPA, certified financial planner, or tax preparer. But you're welcome to throw ideas by me. The number this evening is 610-758-8810. So again, I'm talking about last-minute tax planning strategies and some other financial planning tips and then some general topics. So basically, the outline tonight is giving you some last-minute tax ideas, some tax changes that you need to be aware of because that could impact some of the things you might want to do in the last couple of weeks here or what you need to prepare yourself for in 2013. I want to look at what we won't have in 2012 unless they are extended at the last minute, and that has happened before. I think it was just last year that we came, I think Congress came through with a bunch of tax extenders, or we extended the current tax laws in 2011 through 2012, and that was done like December 17th, and I believe that was 2011, if I'm losing track of my years. We are going to talk a little bit about how 2013 will look different than 2012. And then I want to highlight some things to pay attention to if you get a tax notice, for example. What kind of tax notices are we seeing? I want to draw your attention to important information for foreign bank accounts or brokerage account reporting. And even if you hold securities yourself, directly held securities for foreign companies, you need to be aware of some reporting requirements that you may have. So we'll talk a little bit about that. I also want to give you a broad brush review of Social Security planning and Medicare cost, ways to control the taxation of your Social Security, and the cost of premiums on Medicare Part B and D. And if I have time, we'll also highlight a little bit of Medicare surtax. So boy, that already took a few minutes just to talk about all the things I want to talk about tonight. The best thing would be to answer your calls, though. And that phone number this evening is 610-758-8810. And you can talk live on air, or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, you can give your question to Andrea and she will bring it in and give it to me. So the first thing I want to mention as far as a tax planning strategy at the last minute, there might not be a lot you can do with only 2 weeks left. One thing you could be aware of that you might still be able to impact might be contributions to your retirement account. For example, in our office, we do payroll at the end of the month. So mid-month, there's a draw, but at the end of the month, that's when our true payroll is. And we allow our employees to change their 401k contribution amount whenever they want. So they submit a form and they say, I want to not put money into my 401k, or I want to increase the amount I want to put in my 401k by this percentage, or I want to put in this dollar amount, or maybe I want to change my pre-tax 401k contribution to a Roth 401k contribution. So one of the things that people might want to look at is for 2012, if you pull out your 2011 tax return and go down the page one income items and kind of look to see where you are on page one. If you're someone who, you know, might be on the edge of being eligible to take certain education credits, deductions, or maybe you have Schedule A itemized deductions and you have a lot of medical expenses this year, the amount of medical expenses you can take depend on what your page one income looks like. So you might be someone who, with just a little bit of planning with your 401k contributions, you might be able to reduce your income on page one enough to either put yourself in a lower tax bracket or to allow more deductions on your itemized deductions. So you want to look to see if you are close, and let's pretend you haven't contributed all the money that you could to your 401k and your employer allows you to make adjustments. If, for example, you put another $3,000 into your 401k and your paycheck's that much for the month, you might be able to have your employer withhold the money for your retirement account. It'll lower your income on page one. That would lower your income tax, but then it also might allow other deductions that are tied to that page one income. For example, sometimes people have education credits. It all depends on what your page one income is. Maybe you want to make a contribution to an IRA account for a spouse, but again, it might hinge on the other income on page one. So you want to look to see if by making an additional contribution to your 401k, if it'll help you for tax purposes. The same thing can happen with a simple if you can adjust that as well. Now, the contribution amounts for your 401k, the limits for 2012 is $17,000. So if you're someone who maybe had, you know, contributed throughout the year $10,000 and, you know, just by doing a little bit more could lower your income, you might want to look at that. If you're over age 50, there's a $5,500 catch-up contribution. So for 2012, you could do $22,500. Another thing to be aware of, for 2013, going into 2013, if you just got a raise, some people get raises in the last quarter, don't get used to spending that money already. Get one of those forms that I was just talking about as far as your 401k elections and possibly increase the amount you're going to put into your retirement account. If that works for you and your cash flow, that is something that you should review and consider. If you got a 2% increase or a 3% increase in your wages and you're not used to having that extra money yet, a great way to save for your future, for your retirement, and save on taxes might be to increase your contributions to your 401k. Folks, we're coming up to our first break. If you have questions this evening, give us a call. The phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Hi, this is Dina Hall. I've gathered some of my friends to join me in a special WDIY benefit concert as part of the new performing arts series, Ice House Tonight. It will be an intimate night of acoustic music at the Charles A. Brown Ice House on Sand Island in Bethlehem. Joining me will be Mo Durant, Mike Fritz, Dave Fry, Fiona Hennessy, and Chuck Donches. Come join us Saturday, December 22nd at 8 p.m. Tickets are $10 per person and can be purchased in advance or at the door. For more information, WDIY.org.
Okay, welcome back to the show. The phone number this evening, 610-758-8810. We're talking about some last-minute tax planning strategies, and I had just mentioned if you need to reduce your income on page one, you might still have time at work to put more money into a retirement account through 401k, maybe a simple, or maybe you don't have a retirement plan at work and you can put money into an IRA. Those limits in 2012 are $17,000 for the 401k with a $5,500 catch-up contribution if you're over age 50. And a simple contribution is $11,500. I think the catch-up contribution, if you're over age 50, is $2,500 on that. The IRA contribution for 2012 is $5,000 with a catch-up contribution of $1,000. I also want to make you aware that you do have a little flexibility if you are someone in an IRA or if you are someone who has a self-employed plan like a solo 401k or a SEP IRA for yourself. As far as the IRAs, you actually have until April 15th of 2013 to make a contribution for 2012. So maybe you're someone who you're not sure if you even can make the contribution because maybe your income's too high or maybe you don't think you're going to have the cash to do it. Well, start saving it now and you have until April 15th to figure that all out, to file, you know, to run the numbers on your tax return. If your income is within the thresholds, you could still make an IRA contribution, a deductible IRA contribution by April 15th. If you're self-employed and you have a 401k, you need to save some extra money, you put your return on extension, and you can make those contributions up to the extension due date. So you have until October 15th of 2013 to make a contribution to a solo 401k or SEP plan for self-employed people. So those are some great dates to keep in mind. Okay. We did have Jeff from Copley called in with a question, and he asked, are donations to your public radio or television station tax deductible? Yes, they are. So, for example, WDIY is an NPR member station, so we're public radio, and a donation to WDIY would be a tax deduction on your tax return if you itemize. So you have to be someone who files a Schedule A itemized deduction in order to get that deduction. And that would also apply, for example, to our local public television station, PBS Channel 39. Those are tax deductible. Years and years ago, we used to be able to take charitable contributions as a deduction without itemizing. And then at some point, and I don't remember what year it was, they changed it and only allowed those charitable contributions on Schedule A if you itemize. So one of the strategies, if we're going to talk about tax planning strategies tonight, and this brings up a great point that I can make that I hadn't thought about mentioning, but I will, is that sometimes you have people who maybe never have quite enough to itemize. Maybe they're like always on the edge. And let's pretend they have like that $2,000 charitable contribution they do every year, but their standard deduction for married filing joint is, and I'm trying to remember, like $11,600. And maybe of the with the standard deduction, that might be higher than if they itemized, but maybe they're always right on the edge. So what we suggest is 1 year you don't make the charitable contribution. So let's pretend your other Schedule A deductions are like $9,000. Well, let me say $10,000. And that $2,000 would have put you just over by a couple bucks. Well, instead of doing that charitable contribution, skip it. Let's pretend in 2012, skip it. And then in early 2013, you make your 2012 contribution and you make your 2013 contribution such that in 2013, instead of just always being like right on the edge or hovering right around that standard deduction amount, always being the same every year, just getting the standard deduction, if you ladder your charitable contributions or hopscotch them, then in 2013, for example, if you do the 2000 plus the 2000, I said before with the 2000, you were just hovering. Now you would actually itemize deductions and you might be itemizing more like 13,000 or 14,000. So it's almost like you get the benefit of maximizing the standard deduction every other year and then getting the bonus of the charitable contribution every other year. So I do have clients who do that. So that is something to think about if you're someone who otherwise doesn't itemize. You want to keep that in mind. Okay, so tax planning strategies. The other thing to think about, folks, if you're someone who thinks you're going to be in a higher tax bracket in 2013, either because tax rates are going to revert back to the old rules, which are much higher in 2013, or you are going to be one of those high income earners that you think would end up, even if the tax laws changed and there was some kind of compromise, if the higher net worth clients, higher income clients end up having higher income tax rates, you might want to also think about whether you want to hold off on those end of year charitable contributions to see if it makes sense for you to save them and throw them into 2013 because you might be in a higher tax bracket in 2013. Here's just the little rub on that. Not knowing what's going to happen, the other thing that could end up happening in 2013 if we revert back to the old tax laws, if you are a high income earner or have a lot of income on your tax return, the old rules, if they kick back in, might also apply limitations to your Schedule A itemized deductions. So if I say, if you don't take the deduction this year and you hold off and take it in 2013, what we're risking is some of your deductions might be limited a little bit. And it's actually like a break-even circular calculation kind of thing that it's kind of hard to know how you might be affected, especially if we're not exactly sure what's going to happen to the tax laws. We don't know if those adjusted gross income limitations on your itemized deductions will kick in or not. So that's something to be aware of. It's going to be a little game you're going to have to play. So if you're someone who does like, you know, $20,000 charitable contributions in December, you might want to think if it's going to make sense for you to do it in 2012 or hold off and do it in 2013 if you think you're going to be in higher rates. Okay, so something to pay attention to. Folks, if you have questions this evening, the phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. We're talking about some last-minute tax planning strategies. One of those was reducing your page one income by putting more money into retirement accounts. And then per Jeff's question, talking about charitable donations and how that might come into play in saving you taxes either in 2012 or 2013. So if you have questions this evening about some tax planning strategies, you're welcome to give us a call. You can either call and talk live with me, or you can call in and give your question to Andrea, and she'll bring it into the studio, and I will do my best to answer it. So we're going to take another quick break, and when we come back, we'll continue our discussion on some last-minute tax planning strategies and some other financial planning opportunities I hope I can share with you before the end of the show. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Welcome back to the show. The phone number this evening, folks, 610-758-8810. We're talking about some last-minute tax planning strategies and some things I just think you need to be aware of. For example, there are certain tax benefits that were set to expire in 2012, have expired in 2012. What we don't know is if they're going to be extended. So when you pull out that 2011 tax return I told you to pull out and start looking at that income and see what you can still do with the last couple weeks here, one of the things you're going to want to look at when you look at, for example, your Schedule A itemized deductions, you're going to want to see if you're someone who took a deduction for state and local sales tax. Where that kicks in, because that is one of the deductions that had expired. So if in the past you itemized and you benefited from that deduction called state and local sales tax, you may not have that in 2012. So you want to look to see if you're prepared for, you know, the change that might make on your return. That's typically not a very big deduction unless you were someone who like bought a car or something in the past. That may not be available to you. So maybe in 2012, you're someone who bought a car and thinks that you're going to be able to take a deduction for the sales tax. Right now, that deduction expired, so it may not be available to you. Again, what we don't know is if they might put through some extenders at the last minute here in 2012. The state and local sales tax was available for folks who did not have, it was if it was higher than your state and local withholding tax. So for people who are working, typically their state and local withholding tax was usually higher than any kind of state and local sales tax deduction. So usually this was for people who were retired or who weren't working, and the state and local tax was higher. So again, that might not be available in 2012. You need to be aware of it. For folks who didn't qualify for other education credits, there was something called a tuition and fees deduction. Maybe your income was too high. Maybe it was, you were doing continuing education, adult education, you know, beyond your four-year degree. You may have qualified for something called the tuition and fees deduction, which was a page one deduction. Right now, that has expired for 2012, so don't think that you might be getting these deductions that you've had in the past without reviewing your return. Again, pull out your 2011 return. Don't make any assumptions. The teacher's classroom deduction, that is a deduction of, I believe it was $250. Teachers have had that for several years. It keeps getting extended. We don't know if that's going to be extended or not. And that is basically a deduction for teachers who are spending their own personal money for supplies for their classrooms. Something that we had in the past was something called a qualified charitable deduction. People made a contribution to their charity directly out of their IRA, and in that case, they didn't have to reflect the distribution from the IRA for that amount that they gave to charity. That was gone in 2012. I think it was last year that also was extended at the last second, like December 17th or whatever, and it was almost too late to have anybody do it at that point. So I don't know if it's even worth talking about that. So you have to be aware of certain tax benefits that are going to expire in 2012. So the educator expenses is gone. Some folks who bought homes that had mortgage insurance and premiums that they've been paying, that was a deduction for certain taxpayers in 2011, 2010. So there was if you were paying insurance premiums, like mortgage insurance premiums on your qualified residence, that was a deduction that has expired for 2012. And some of the other changes were not just that things may have expired, but maybe credits had changed. For example, an adoption credit. In 2011, the credit was maxed at $13,360, but it was refundable. So if you adopted someone in 2011, and in particular, if it was a special needs child from the United States, the credit was refundable. In 2012, the maximum credit is $12,650, but it is not refundable. So there's a big difference there, a really big difference. Energy efficient homes, some of those credits expired. Certain solar energy improvements still qualify, I believe, through 2017. Up to 30% of the cost, but most of the energy efficient improvement credits expired unless they extend them. Okay, so a number of different credits changing. Now let's talk a little bit about some of the differences between 2012 and 2013. And one of the things that you need to be aware of, especially when we're talking about last-minute tax planning strategies, is the change in capital gains tax rates that we're going to be facing. And why do you need to know 2012 and 2013? Because if we're looking at tax planning strategies, it could be very different strategies for different people depending on their earnings and how much money they're making. Because what we have coming in 2013 is something called a Medicare surtax on net investment income, and we also anticipate higher income tax rates on capital gains, either because the old tax rules come back in, or for people making over $250,000, you know, as proposed, their tax rates would go up. We might do one strategy for people making less than $250,000, and we might have a different strategy for people making over $250,000. And there could also be even a different strategy for people in 2012 who might be in a 15% tax bracket. So what are we talking about here? Capital gains tax rates in 2012 apply if you've held investment property, and I'm basically going to be talking about mutual funds and stocks for my example purposes, because there's certain other rates that apply to other kinds of positions. So right now, mutual funds and stocks that you hold in taxable accounts, not retirement accounts, your regular taxable accounts. If you sell something that you've held longer than a year, then the gain on those sales are going to be taxed at 15% if you are in a tax bracket higher than 15%. So if you're in a tax bracket of 25% or higher, your capital gains proceeds, the gains on investments that you have in mutual funds and stocks, will only be taxed at 15%. If you are in a 15% tax bracket, the 2012 capital gains tax rates for people who are in a 15% tax bracket or lower are zero, 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 zero. So if you are someone who's in a 15% or lower tax bracket and you're not sure what's going to happen in 2012, we really don't know if the tax rates are going to get extended for people who are making less than $250,000. That's one of the proposals. If the tax rates stay the same as they are now for people making $250,000 or less, then you still might have those same rules in 2013. So you may not be inclined to sell any positions that you have, because you might say to yourself, well, my capital gains rates, you know, chances are they might stay the same. But maybe you don't know. And since we do know what the rates are in 2012, it might be time to review your portfolio to see if it makes sense or not for you to, you know, take any of those gains. In order to take the gains, you have to sell them. You have to realize them. So that's something to keep in mind, too. You know, you would sell, and then if you like the position, you could always call it, you know, buy it back. But keep in mind, do you want to take the gains now, lock in that lower tax rate if it applies to you, or do you want to take the chance and hold off? And let's pretend you decide to wait till 2013 and all of a sudden you need the money and you take that big gain. It might be subject to those rates. The other thing is, though, if you sell it, buy it back, now you've got a short-term period again, but you've reset the basis, you've reset the cost. So I will talk a little bit more about the nuances of capital gains and why some people might want to force gains in 2012 and why someone might not want to force the gains, or sales, I should say. Phone number 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Okay, folks, we have about a half hour left. I can't believe we haven't had any other calls than the one question earlier. People are shopping. They're getting ready for Christmas and the holidays. That must be it. Well, if you have questions this evening and are paying attention to your tax situation, because we only have a couple weeks left, you can give us a call if you have questions. 610-758-8810. 610-758-8810. Let me round up this capital gains discussion. So for folks who think that they are in the 15% bracket this year and they have gains they want to take, and if they're in the 15% tax bracket and maybe their gains could end up being taxed at zero to the extent they are in the 15% bracket, they might want to take gains. For people who are high income earners, who have income on page one of more than $250,000, they could be looking in 2013 at something called the Medicare surtax, which is a 3.8% tax on net investment income that exceeds $250,000. So let's pretend their income on page one is $300,000 and they have $30,000 of capital gains. We know already that their $30,000, to the extent it exceeds the $250,000, would be subject to the 3.8% surtax. And chances are, if tax rates go up on people making more than $250,000, and that's married filing joint, by the way, then chances are they could have a higher capital gains tax rate. It might not be 15, it might be 20. So right there, they could be looking at the difference between 20 and 15 is 5 plus 3.8. They could be looking at an extra 8.8% tax on these kinds of gains. So those folks might want to be pushing gains into 2012 to get the more favorable tax rates. Again, then what you're doing is if you buy back into the market, you're resetting your holding period, and any positions held less than a year are subject to ordinary income tax rates. So be aware of that. But you've also bought back in higher and have set that basis higher. Some folks might not want to push their gains into this year. Maybe they are retiring in 2013, and maybe they're going to be in a lower tax bracket in 2013. Or some folks might have huge losses on their tax return. So, you know, when these people get panicked and they start saying, oh, I've got to sell, I've got to get these gains while, you know, there's lower tax rates. Well, if you have a $100,000 capital loss on your tax return, then you've not really benefiting from the lower tax rates. Do you understand that? Because your capital losses will offset that gain first. So maybe you don't want to sell. Maybe you want to just let those losses run into the next year when you're going to be in a higher tax bracket. So kind of be aware of that. So it might not make sense. The same strategy is not going to make sense for all people. You really need to study it for yourself. I do have a caller online too. I have Tim from Bethlehem. Tim, can you hear me?
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Good. How can I help you? You got to turn your radio down, Tim, so you can hear me without the delay.
I'm sorry. It was just kind of cool hearing myself on the radio for the first time.
Congratulations. I know it is kind of cool. So how can I help you?
Okay, I have a question. I just started working. I just got hired from my company about a month ago.
Uh-huh.
And I'm single. I'm out of college. And I'm interested in purchasing real estate within about a year to a year and a half from now.
Okay.
And I was wondering what you would consider. I'm already throwing money in my 401k. My company has an employer stock plan, which is pretty nice because we get about a 15% discount on our company stock.
Yep, that's great.
So I'm dropping about 10% into my retirement savings account.
Mm-hmm.
So, long-winded, could you first touch upon whether 10% is a good number to be throwing towards my retirement?
Okay.
But also, I'm kind of curious about what you would consider as the best saving vehicle to get towards my my real estate purchase goal.
Okay.
It's actually a condo. It's about $100,000. The down payment would be about $20,000. I'm going into it with a friend of mine.
Okay.
I just need to save about $10,000. So I was curious. Do you think I should just have it like in a normal savings vehicle, like something that's pretty liquid that wouldn't get me a savings or much of an interest rate, or try switching to maybe investing in equities? But I was kind of worried about just the capital gains tax being too much, that it's really not worth taking the chance on my stock appreciating.
Okay. All right, Tim, a couple things you have going on. First of all, I think it's great that you're working, you got a good job, and that you can afford to put money away into a 401k. 10% sounds like a fantastic number. How much people can put away in their retirement account all depends on their own personal cash flow and their other obligations. So right now, you must be renting. You're not a homeowner, and your cash flow allows you to save that much. You're saying you want to also save to buy a home. Now, a couple things. Actually, next week, I am talking about real estate. I am talking about buying real estate, and not just as a principal residence, but also as rental property and different things like that. So you're talking about making your first kind of investment in real estate. A couple things I'm just going to throw out there, general comments. I would suggest that you and your buddy look. I don't know if you have already committed to looking at a condo. Sometimes you have to be aware of condos and the other cost associated with them, because you're not just putting money into a home that then you're getting the appreciation on. A condo, you're also going to be paying for a mortgage, you're going to have real estate taxes, but you're going to have condo fees. And you have to say to yourself, is it worthwhile for you to be putting the money into the condo fees, you know, to maintain the property, et cetera? And then I also think you should look to see whether or not the appreciation that you're hoping to get out of this real estate purchase at some point is going to be what you're hoping for. Sometimes condos don't appreciate the same way a single residence might, or even a twin might. Okay, so I think that maybe it'd be worthwhile for you and your buddy to kind of explore whether or not a condo and the hopeful appreciation you want, you know, you want it to grow in value so that at some point you're going to sell it, I would think. So look at that. And the other thing you want to pay attention to is, do you and your friend have enough credit right now and good credit that you will qualify for the best interest rate that you can qualify for. You know, sometimes people want to get into real estate right away, but you've got to factor in how much it's going to cost you to get into the real estate. So you want to understand what kind of interest rate you're going to qualify for. If you and your buddy both have good credit, you might be there, so that would be good. If you don't have enough credit or haven't established enough credit, you might want to talk to a mortgage banker or someone to say, what is it going to take for us to get there? Now, you've got to also factor that in and balance that against, are we in a really great market right now? Could you get a really good deal on real estate? And even if your credit isn't the top notch and you can't get maybe a 2.75, you know, if you could get a 3.25 with your credit or a 3.5, maybe that would still be enough, you know, for you to go into it. You have to kind of balance that and explore it. Are you following me on that?
Absolutely, okay. Yeah.
All right. Now, having said all that, and having said that you're putting the money into your 401k, a couple things. If you're able to put the money in the 401k and still are able to save money outside of that, you've got to balance that, because what would get complicated is if you don't save enough money outside of the 401k plan. If you want a $10,000 down payment, are you going to have enough savings? And maybe you already have it, which would be great. Are you going to have enough savings that you won't have to tap your 401k to get that? What I see sometimes is people go to buy real estate, they don't have enough money for the down payment, and then they borrow from their 401k. That is an option, but
it's
a
covered expense for a first-time home purchase.
Right.
I wouldn't want to touch my 401k at all.
Right.
Because, like, I really see the value in the compounding interest from where I'm at right now at age 23 to when I get to 65. So I wouldn't want to touch that.
Okay, that's great.
I would want to be able to be at the point where I could independently finance my real estate purchase without touching into any of my retirement assets.
Great. Okay, so then as far as then hopefully having enough money and extra cash flow to kind of put away some of this other money for the down payment, as far as where you have that, I can't give any specific investment recommendations. But what I would say is when we have folks who are going to need money very soon, you do not want to take a lot of risk with that money. So you have to be careful how you're going to invest it. So if you know you're going to need $10,000 within a year, you know, even 18 months, something like that, you're not going to want to be risky with it. Okay? So just be careful with that. All right? But congratulations on everything. Let me mention one last thing, because you had said that there's a stock purchase plan, I think is what you have, an employee stock purchase plan. When you work for a company and they have stock, they sometimes have these employee stock purchase plans that you can buy the stock at a 15% discount, which is great. Mm-hmm. Keep in mind that there's certain rules around that, that you really are only benefiting from that 15% discount if you basically keep that for about 2 years. There's like a grant date, and then there's like a holding period. So you kind of have to keep it long enough to have that 15% discount apply, because if you sell it too soon, that discount gets added back to your W-2 and you don't really get it. So just keep that in mind. Employee stock purchase plans, different than employee stock ownership plans. That's a different ball of wax. Employee stock purchase plan is the discount, but you have to keep it a certain period of time so that it doesn't get added back in. Okay?
All right. Hey, I just want to say thanks. I'm a big fan of the show. I just graduated, and I took a retirement planning class. So I really love tuning into this show after work, because the stuff you talk about goes all over the stuff we learn in the course.
Oh, that's so cool.
I really love it. Like, I really appreciate everything you say.
Oh, thanks, Tim. I appreciate you listening. Thank you very much. Have a great night, and good luck with everything.
Thanks. You too.
Thanks.
Take care.
Bye-bye. I love those kinds of calls. And Tim, you were great on the air, and I love when young people, and Andrea's doing the dance. I love when young people especially are taking, you know, action and being proactive and everything like that, and visualizing all positive good things. It's really refreshing, and thank you for calling. Oh, and we had another caller who called in. Nope, they're not on air. It was off air. Let me see if I can get this in before our next break. She's a single school teacher within 2 years of retirement. People were talking about 401ks. I never had one. I have money in savings. She said, is it worth starting one now, and is there a lot of risk involved? Ruth, as a teacher, I assume if you're a public school teacher, you may have had access to a 403B, but you also had access to the PEESRs program. The PEESRs, you were probably automatically putting in 7.5% of your wages into the PEESRs program. And then what happens, you should be getting a statement from them every so often, or you can request an illustration of it. And what will happen is you're going to have a benefit of a report showing your contributions into PEESRs, and then you're going to have what the plan has, you know, grown to. And with that illustration, it'll tell you what your pension will be when you retire, either if you keep your contributions in the plan or if you take your contributions out. And what happens is, your 7.5% that you've been putting in, actually what they'll call your contributions, that can actually come out when you retire. You can roll that over into an IRA rollover, and then you have access to that like a normal retirement account, and then you still have your monthly pension coming. So you actually kind of get to tap your own contributions, you know, sooner than if you had them included in your monthly pension amount. The school systems also have a 403B option. You may or may not have that. I don't know. 403B is almost like the equivalent to a 401K. It is another tax-deferred retirement account option for people, usually governmental or nonprofit workers. 403B, similar to the 401K. You can't just go start your own 401K unless you're self-employed and have work and earnings and things like that. So ask for those statements. Talk to your administrator or HR people about your PEESR statement and what that looks like, and if you can kind of get an illustration of what your contributions are and what your pension's going to look like, because that's very important if you're only 2 years away from retirement. Very, very important for you to look at so you know what to expect. We're going to take another quick break, and then we'll be back. 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk and traditional music is a crazy quilt of colors and textures. In the tradition traces its many patterns and designs. Music handed down from generation to generation. In the tradition, Wednesday evening at 7 on WDIY FM Lehigh Valley Community Public Radio.
And we are back, and this is your host, Lori Siebert. We're talking about tax planning strategies, and we kind of went through some of those, had some great calls. I really, really appreciate those. And we're going to wrap up, I guess, in about 12 minutes. We still have time for calls if you have a question. The phone number is 610-758-8810. That is 610-758-8810. Talked about some differences between 2012, 2013, maybe putting extra money in your retirement accounts before year end, maybe harvesting gains in 2012 if you want to, if you're worried about tax rates going up and you have gains, maybe you want to lock in these lower rates in 2012. They may still apply to you in 2013. We don't know, because we don't know what the tax laws are going to be in 2013. We only know what they would revert back to. So there is some tax planning strategies there. Maybe not taking gains because maybe you have lots and lots of losses, and maybe those losses would benefit you more in 2013. Self-employed people, if you can collect outstanding, you know, invoices, maybe force some income into 2012. That is also something you may want to do if you think you're going to be in a higher tax bracket in 2013. So a number of different things you can do for that. I do want to talk about a couple things that came up at the seminar I was at today, the individual income tax workshop. And there was some mention about IRS tax notices. And this is something I just, you know, like to mention every now and then, because I think it's very, very important to know that I think someone had said, an IRS agent, I think actually had told someone who had called in, that there's something like 2 million erroneous tax notices that go out. So if you're someone who gets a tax notice, or you know someone who gets a tax notice, or if you've ever had a tax notice in the past, you've got to be really, really careful. You can't always believe the tax notice that you get. It might not be right. And I'll tell you two that I just got for clients in the past probably month. And it was interesting, because I guess what you don't always know is what the IRS has decided to kind of put into their software to flag things, that all of a sudden we're getting all the same notices for things I have never had a notice for ever. For example, I had two clients who got notices for not paying self-employment tax, which is like a Social Security tax, like you're employed, you're self-employed, for not paying self-employment tax on executor compensation. So both of these clients were executors for estates. They took an executor commission, and let's pretend it was $10,000. They were sent a notice by the IRS saying they owed all this money, and the client, you know, sends it to me because I'm the tax preparer. Yay, they're so smart to send it to me. And I look at the notice and I say, executor commissions are not subject to self-employment tax unless you're a professional executor, like a bank would be a professional executor, or a lawyer might be a professional executor. But these are just individuals who are like executors for, you know, their father or, you know, an uncle. So it was resolved fairly easily. I just sent a letter to the IRS saying, you know, they are not professional executors, and according to code section, blah, 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 sent the notice to the IRS, and they respond accordingly, which says, great, case closed, zero tax, thank you very much. But what I wanted to highlight is that how often people get notices and they get scared and they automatically pay them, when in fact the IRS is only working on information that's given to them or how their software interprets it. They might not even have all the details. So they simply needed to be told that they weren't professional executors. But how many people don't have preparers, or just assume that it's right, and, oh, they made a mistake? Happens all the time. Another situation that we've had several clients get notices on were the Roth IRA conversions. In 2010, they converted IRA monies to Roths, and they elected to pay the income tax in 2011 and 2012. The IRS sent notices saying that the taxpayers owed their income tax in 2010. And that's not what it was. It's right there on the 2010 tax return that the person elects to pay the income tax in 2011 and 2012, and yet clients get notices. So again, it's a simple letter to the IRS saying, you know, here's the box that was checked. They're paying the tax in 2011 and 2012, and don't worry about it. Or I think we had someone who got a notice who had recharacterized. They had done a conversion, then they changed their mind and reversed it. And the IRS was looking for income tax on that as well, and it was reversed, so there were no income tax to be paid. Also, a lot of people get notices for things that maybe they didn't report correctly, but maybe they don't owe the tax that the IRS has calculated. So it's kind of one of those things where you say, yes, IRS, I agree with some of the changes, but not all of the changes. When someone works for a company that maybe gives the employee a non-qualified stock option, they say, hey, employee, you're doing such a great job. We're going to give you the opportunity to buy stock at $50, and you have 10 years to do it. And, you know, 5 years later, the stock's worth, you know, $70, and they exercise. The difference between the 50 and the 70 is income to that employee. And it's included in their wages. So the employee says, I'm going to exercise. The company takes care of everything. It's called a cashless exercise. They really have you know, bought and sold the stock all in one transaction, and, you know, they think they're done and it's all taken care of and it's been reported in their W-2. Well, somewhere along the way, that stock was sold, and that stock gets sold and reported in the taxpayer's ID number. And the taxpayer doesn't realize the connection. And what they actually have to report is that the sale was for $70 and the cost was $70. And the cost was $70 because they paid $50 for it and they had $20 included in their W-2. So it was actually a wash. But the IRS doesn't know that it was a wash. The IRS only knows that they sold stock for $70. So sometimes the IRS is right, but there still might not be tax due. You just kind of have to explain it. So non-qualified stock options are a big piece that I see a lot of people miss. And also, if people sell positions at a loss, sometimes they think they don't have to report it because it was at a loss. You have to report it, especially if you get a tax document reporting it. All right. We had another caller off air. We had Mary from Bethlehem. She said, I have an 88-year-old mother who incurred extraordinary health care expenses this year due to the need for in-home care. Are those expenses deductible? Mary, this is a great question, and it's very important for you to ask this question and be aware of the opportunities here. Your 88-year-old mother who had the extraordinary health care expenses, this could end up being a tax planning strategy for you to use for the next, you have 2 weeks to do this possibly. What happens if the health care expenses could be deductible on Schedule A? It's an itemized deduction. Medical expenses that exceed 7.5% of the page one income could be a deduction. You just have to make sure the health care expenses qualify. If your mother was like incapacitated, she needed such extraordinary care because she couldn't feed herself, couldn't walk, couldn't bathe herself, take care of her, you know, bathroom needs, then those expenses might be all deductible. So you want to understand what medical expenses are deductible. Now let's pretend that adds up to $40,000. And let's pretend mom only has Social Security on her tax return as income. And she doesn't really have anything else, maybe a small pension. But she always files a tax return. What you want to look at, Mary, is if mom has any kind of retirement account, like maybe she has an IRA and maybe she's taking her required minimum distributions out of it. And when we add these extraordinary medical expenses, maybe mom has negative taxable income of, you know, $20,000. What you might want to play with on the tax return, and I really suggest putting this through a tax calculator, is what if mom took more out of an IRA account than she was required to take? Let's pretend her required minimum distribution was $10,000 and mom has a $100,000 IRA. Well, maybe mom could take $20,000 out of her IRA and put that on page one of her tax return. What you're looking for is that may affect the taxation on her Social Security. So that's why I think you need to put it through some tax planning software. But because her medical expenses are so high, maybe it would completely offset the income on her return. So you might want to take the money out of the IRA. Maybe you want to convert mom's IRA money into a Roth IRA. If mom has an IRA, she always has to take out the required minimum distribution. That's a given. You have to take that out and pay the income tax on it. But if she has even more IRA money, she could convert it to a Roth if she doesn't need it. So you might want to look at those strategies as well. And this is assuming she doesn't need any kind of Medicaid planning or anything like that. So you want to look at those things as well. Planning for Social Security. Real quick, let me wrap this up. Social Security is taxed based on your other income on your return. So it could be not taxed at all. It could be up to 50%. It could be up to 85%, all depending on how much other income is on your tax return. So if you can control other income on page one of your return, you might be able to affect the taxation of your Social Security. How could you affect other income on your return? Maybe you're taking out more IRA contributions than you need to. Maybe you could lower those, and that would lower the amount of Social Security that gets taxed. You also want to be careful if you're getting to be age 65 and you have Medicare insurance premiums coming up. There are means, they are means tested. So if Medicare insurance premiums Part B cost about $110, if you're married filing joint, for example, and your adjusted gross income on page one is more than $170, you're going to pay another $40. And if you're married filing joint, both of you will pay an extra $40. So instead of $100 Medicare premium, $110 Medicare premium, it might be like $150 Medicare premium each, and that's for every month. So you might want to control your income on page one to avoid taxation of Social Security and or to avoid increased Medicare premiums Part B and D. Folks, thanks so much for being here this week. I love the calls. Thank you very much. I really love the listeners who call in. And I want to thank Jeff for being here. Thank you, Andrea. Next week, I'm going to be joined by Matt Petrozelli of Valley National. We're going to discuss, so you own real estate. What do you need to do? What do you need to know about that? What can you do with it? And what are the tax implications? I can't speak. Coming up next, Tom Druckenmiller within the tradition folk music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive, and make the best of your financial choices. Have a great week.